economics of President Obama's jobs plan.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson with The Breakdown, our economy one step at a time, and Marketplace's special look at jobs and getting America back to work. President Obama heads to Richmond, Virginia today to drum up support for the $450 billion jobs bill he presented to Congress last night. The plan is 53% tax breaks, with much of the rest going to infrastructure spending and aid to the unemployed.
There should be nothing controversial about this piece of legislation. Everything in here is the kind of proposal that's been supported by both Democrats and Republicans, including many who sit here tonight.
Well, there are the politics. For more on the economics of the plan, let's bring in Richard DeCaeser. He's an economist with the Parthenon Group in Boston. Good morning.
Good morning.
What, to you, is the most important and useful part of this package for economic growth?
The biggest part of the package, both in dollars and in impact, are the changes to Social Security payroll taxes. This year, individuals have been enjoying a cut on their Social Security payments, and this proposal extends that into 2012. Now it's actually giving employers a greater incentive to hire workers, and that's where I think the real hook is in terms of jobs.
I want to ask about one other part of this. There is $60 billion in this $450 billion package that goes to more aid to the unemployed. Why is something like that in a job creation bill?
It's trying, or at least designed, to help those who are at the greatest risk of becoming perpetually unemployed. But there are also other aspects of this, for example, those targeted at returning veterans that are really, I think, designed to address the prospect of all these soldiers coming back and not finding employment, and also adding to that pool of long-term unemployed.
So noble causes for sure, but does that lead to job creation?
It does, and it's all about dollars. If people are, employers in particular, are getting the incentive to put more people on the books, they'll respond to those incentives. Now, is it a total game changer? Is it going to cause HR managers to run out a long list of help wanted advertisements? No. But on the margin, it will be impactful, and it's really on the margin that we're operating.
Richard, I just want to ask you, do you think that this is really going to lead to growth if this thing gets passed, or is this just enough to keep us out of another recession?
I think this is going to contribute to growth. Now, my baseline assumption had been that we're looking at an economy creeping along at about a 2.5% rate in real GDP terms. That's nothing to write home about, but that is certainly non-recessionary. Layering this in should add about a percentage point to that, which takes us from the muddling along mode to something a little bit more respectable. I think it'll help keep the economy moving forward, and I think the recession, to the extent that it was at all possible, is now much less likely.
Richard DeCaeser, economist with the Parthenon Group, thanks so much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are down across the world this morning, down about 1.5% in Paris right now. And a new Wall Street Journal report won't help the markets if it turns out to be true. The Journal says Bank of America officials are talking about laying off 40,000 workers to shore up the bank's finances. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow fell 119 points to close at 11,295.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Reputation.com, monitoring, protecting, and improving reputations online while deleting personal data from the Internet. Reputation.com. By United Methodist Church, offering an opportunity for listeners to join others to reclaim September 11th as a day of hope at RethinkChurch.org. And by Allianz, providing investment, insurance, and retirement solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S. since 1896. AllianzUSA.com.
All this week, we're looking at the economic consequences of 9/11. Today, we focus on charitable contributions. A U.S. government crackdown after the 9/11 attacks led some of the biggest Muslim American charities to shut down, and donors have been left scrambling, as Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
Before 9/11, most of the charity raised by Muslims in the U.S. went to Muslims abroad, refugees from Afghanistan, school kids in Gaza. Then came the U.S. crackdown on charities, which continues to this day. Jennifer Turner of the ACLU says it scared many Muslims away from giving zakat. That's the religious obligation to donate 2.5% of your income to charity.
a large number of people also have shifted their giving and no longer give to humanitarian relief organizations or Muslim charities, but instead are giving to the building of mosques locally or to local soup kitchens or shelters.
Some Muslim immigrants still send zakat directly to poor family members, schools, or orphanages back home. But overall, much less money is flowing abroad, and that has an upside for domestic charities, like the Inner City Muslim Action Network on Chicago's South Side, which hosts evening discussions about Islam.
Does anybody know the name of the brother in the hadith? He comes to the Prophet.
Rami Nashashibi founded the group, which has grown in the post-9/11 charitable vacuum. The budget's up from $200,000 to $2 million. They run a free medical clinic, arts, and anti-violence programs.
9/11 led to increase in funding from individual donors who felt like this is really a important part of our work that, quite frankly, we were neglecting.
Another fundraising winner is civil rights groups that fight discrimination against Muslims. Nihad Awad says his group, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, has expanded from 8 offices to 30. With so much money staying in the U.S., he says American Islam is getting a makeover.
Mosques that used to be built with maybe $500,000 now are being built with $5 million.
And Awad says don't be surprised to see lots of cash in the collection box.
In some functions, people do not give credit card information or don't give checks. They just safely, they give cash.
That's to keep your charity humble before God and invisible to U.S. government investigators. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And finally, Nike is releasing a limited edition sneaker based on the pair of shoes that lights up in the 1989 movie Back to the Future Part 2. Now, those shoes in the movie laced themselves. The new Nike shoes will not. But the real disappointment for me is that Nike is releasing shoes from that movie and not the hoverboard. Please, someone, release the hoverboard. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
Jobs, jobs, and more jobs. It's been dominating the headlines, the airwaves, and the television screens. Last night, the president weighed in.
I am sending this Congress a plan that you should pass right away. It's called the American Jobs Act.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. The Breakdown, our coverage of the economy one step at a time, wraps up with this not-so-easy question of, now what do we do? Next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.